know how to answer. Ever since, two very different cards had been burning a hole in his wallet. Julian's, of course, and Dr. Maddox's. The one in his hand right now, crisp and white and heavy as a brick, was the doctor's. His mother had given him this card 6 months ago and asked him to get therapy. He'd promised he would, but he hadn't said when, and Maddox's details had peeked out from behind his library card ever since, whispering that Red was a coward and a big baby, and for God's sake he needed to talk to someone. But he'd been coping fine without. Painting was his therapy, and it always had been. He looked to his right, and his gaze fell on the canvas he'd essentially destroyed last night. Vicious yellow-green, worked into its surface so hard that it had ripped. Maybe painting wasn't doing the job anymore. He raked his hands through his hair and laughed bitterly. All this? Days of confusion and angry acrylic shades because he couldn't decide what to do about Chloe fucking Brown. He was supposed to see her this week, to check the progress on his website. They'd arranged the meeting last week before everything had gone to shit, but then, well, everything had gone to shit. And now he was trapped in a familiar whirlpool of past and present, one he was starting to get really fucking bored with. It went like this. First, he'd remember what Chloe had done, how she'd treated him like a dirty secret, like a giver of illicit orgasms. Might as well borrow her words since she'd put it so perfectly. And he'd feel sick. But then, he'd remember that she hadn't looked pleased with her own knife-like phrase. She'd looked guilty. She'd looked miserable. She'd said instantly, unreservedly, "I'm sorry." And when he thought about that, he was filled with the urge to give her a chance to explain. Until Pippa forced her way into his head, with her tears and her clever words and her own gasping, weepy, "I'm sorry's." The ones that somehow turned him into the brute who'd started it all. The ones that always made him apologise for everything she'd done. His rational mind would say, "It's not the same, they're not the same, that's not even close to what Chloe was doing." But his chest would still feel tight, and his hands would freeze when he tried to pick up the phone and call her. All of which suggested it was time to pick up the phone and call Dr. Maddox instead. He eyed the card suspiciously. Dr. Maddox's first name was Lucinda. He used to live on the same street as a lady with a one-eyed mongrel called Lucinda. He'd really liked that dog. Maybe that was what people called a sign, or maybe he was being a twat. He heaved out a sigh and put down the card, reaching for the canvas he'd ruined, running his fingers over the tear. He was overthinking again and pissing himself off. Time to change tack. He had another problem to agonise over, one he hadn't let himself acknowledge yet. Vic might let Red have dinner with old ladies, but he would not approve of Red fingering a tenant in the street, nor anywhere, really. A bed wouldn't have made it more professional. He should be at Vic's right now, confessing all and tendering his resignation. For some reason, the thought didn't disturb him as much as it should. Red paused for a moment, staring blankly at the canvas in his hand. He thought again, deliberately, about quitting, about leaving the safe little hiding place Vic had given him. No clanging, panicked alarm sounded in his head. All right. That was interesting. That was good. He worked at the discovery like a loose tooth. This job was supposed to be temporary, but the 2-year mark crept closer, and he knew Vic was worried. So was Mum. Maybe when the milestone finally hit, instead of feeling guilty and pressured and trapped by his own insecurities, Red could be leaving. Suddenly, it didn't feel impossible. He was more confident now, ready to display his work, and he'd been researching sales tactics, marketing, and whatever. He should try. He'd get a part-time job too if he couldn't make enough money. Whatever it took, he'd claw his way back to his dreams. The only question was whether his new stuff was good enough to sell. But he'd find out soon enough, when Chloe finished his website. And here he was, back at Chloe again, thinking without a moment's hesitation that she'd hold up her end of the deal. He sat with that for a second. It wasn't the kind of assumption he'd have made about Pippa. No, if this were Pippa, she'd take away what he wanted most, to punish him for being angry, or to manipulate him into forgiving her. But Chloe wasn't going to do that. Of course she wasn't. She never would. He put down the canvas and picked up the card, took out his phone, dialed the number. After 3 long rings and 3,000 rapid heartbeats, a cool voice said in his ear, "Dr. Maddox's office, this is Jonathan speaking. Can I help?"
"Yeah,"
Red said, then cleared his rough throat awkwardly.
"Hi, I think I'd like to make an appointment."
For her own peace of mind, Chloe had decided to stop thinking about Redford Morgan, which was admittedly difficult, since her sisters were devoting their every waking moment to bothering her about Redford Morgan. He was definitely avoiding her. She'd never gone more than a day without glimpsing him around the courtyard or the corridors before, and their email thread was conspicuously silent. He'd answered her apology text 2 days ago, but only to say, "It's fine." It clearly wasn't fine. She didn't know how to reply. He knew that she was sorry, so she should give him space, as much as he needed, even if what he needed was space that lasted forever. Even the thought made her stomach twist. She was a mess, and her family's meddling wasn't helping the situation. True to form, Aunt Mary had informed her twin that Chloe had been seen with a man. Mum had, of course, told Dad, and Dad had grumbled at Gigi, who had promptly called to recommend La Perla lingerie because,
"I know you like to budget, darling."
She'd also passed on the gossip to Danny and Eve, both of whom had proceeded to blow up the sisterly group chat with encouraging, if inappropriate, gifts and profoundly annoying questions. It hadn't taken them long to realise that Chloe's "mysterious gentleman, rather large, gorgeous hair" was Red. Chloe had muted her chat app after 2 days of nonsense. Her sisters had begun sending emails. She didn't open them, of course, but the subject lines were depressing enough. Danny's latest one had been entitled, "Love Potion Recipe Requires 1 lock of ginger hair." But today, annoying sisters were the least of Chloe's worries, because today was the day she was to give Smudge back. She stood in front of the apartment building, pet carrier in hand, knowing Red would be here for moral support if she hadn't horribly insulted him. Not that she was self-flagellating. She'd received communication from the footloose, fancy-free, and clearly irresponsible Annie yesterday. And now the woman wanted her cat back. Ha, hers indeed. Just because she'd purchased him, raised him, and fed him for quite some time didn't necessarily make Smudge Annie's. Chloe had snuggled with him for many hours and also rescued him from a tree. Hers was definitely the greater claim. And yet, she couldn't steal, especially not a pet. So she found herself standing by the building's front doors, waiting for Annie to arrive. Chloe had suggested this location because her flat might be difficult to find, and also because she didn't want to have to invite this woman in and engage in pleasant chit-chat. It was difficult enough standing here, ignoring Smudge's questioning meows. She knew exactly what he was asking, of course. "Why on earth have you put me in a box, you baffling woman?" She couldn't bring herself to reply. The woman was 3 minutes late, which only reinforced Chloe's poor opinion of her. But then, at 11:04, she heard the slap of flat shoes against pavement and the jingle of what sounded like a large bunch of keys. A moment later, a tall, slim woman with honey-coloured curls came into view, covered neck to shin by an oversized camo coat. Despite the odd outfit, she was pretty with soft features, a skin a few shades deeper than her hair, and eyes so bright, Chloe could see them from meters away.
"Hi," the woman said, hurrying over. "Chloe, right? Nightmare parking around here. Annie, by the way, I'm Annie. Oh, is that Purdy? Yes, that's Purdy. Hey, Purdy, hi, baby."
She bent to poke a finger into the cat carrier, then straightened.
"You are Chloe, right? I'm not getting your name wrong, am I? I forget names. I like your glasses."
Chloe intended to say,
Yes, that's me. Hello, and thank you.
What came out of her mouth in clearly scornful tones was, Purdy?
Short for Perdita,
Annie said fondly.
You know, from 101 Dalmatians.
But he's not a Dalmatian?
Gee,
Annie said, and reached for the cat carrier. For one tense moment, Chloe worried her fingers wouldn't release the plastic handle. But her subconscious behaved itself for once, and she didn't start a fight over a cat in the middle of the street. Of course, if she had, it wouldn't be the most scandalous thing she'd done in the street recently.
He's not even spotty,
Chloe insisted, ignoring the wild and unfounded claim that Smudge was, of all things, a girl. Annie gave her a strange look and said,
You're funny. Want to go for a coffee?
Sorry?
You're funny. A bit strange. Want to go for a coffee? You're Chloe, aren't you? Thanks for finding Purdy. My great aunt Amy was supposed to be watching the girls while I was in Malmo. I've been in Malmo, by the way. Fabulous place. Have you been? But she got confused, my great aunt, because I have quite a few cats and I suppose she is quite old. Also, there's that one fox. Yes, in hindsight, it is quite confusing.
Somehow, through a haze of bafflement so thick it might as well have been a brick wall, Chloe managed to croak,
Pardon?
Annie gave her an indulgent smile, as if she was being an absolute ninny, and shoved a hand into a cavernous coat pocket.
Now, where is my... Oh!
She produced a handful of debris. There was an empty Lindor wrapper, an enormous set of keys, what looked like a few foreign coins, a faded receipt, and...
Take my card there, see it?
It really couldn't be missed. It was hot pink and glittery. Chloe took it gingerly by the corner.
Give me a ring and we'll go for coffee, my treat, because you found Purdy.
I don't drink coffee, Chloe murmured, honestly enough, as she studied the card. It read, Annie Amand, Knicker Whisperer. What in the bloody hell?
Tea then,
Annie said brightly.
Got to dash, I'm late. Come on, Purdy, let's be having you, you great big wandering nitwit. Off we go, off we go, off we go.
She turned and hurried up the street again. Chloe stared after her, feeling slightly dazed. When Annie's tall figure disappeared around a corner, Chloe looked at the card in her hand again. Knicker Whisperer? What could that possibly mean? There was a website, along with several social media links, that would probably reveal all, but she didn't want to go searching. Didn't want to spend any more time dwelling on that odd woman and her strange invitation, because it would only remind her of one fact. Smudge was gone. She shoved the card into her pocket and strode back into the building, driven by an urgent need to get home. It took her a moment to realise that the odd wetness sliding down her cheek was a tear. Oh, how mortifying. She was crying over a cat she'd had only for a couple of weeks, and in public too. Worse than that, she actually felt sad. More than sad. Devastated. As if someone had ripped a hole in her chest. The only thing that could possibly make this situation worse would be bumping into Red. She would hate that. It would be awful, horrible, the end of the world. So she was glad when she made it to her flat without seeing him. Very glad. Indeed. When someone knocked on Chloe's door the next day, it never occurred to her that it might be Red. She had gotten used to the weight of his absence. She'd closed her curtains because she refused to accidentally spy on him. She was giving him space, damn it. But there he was, on her doorstep, only 4 days after she'd ruined everything. Hey, he said. She swallowed, which hurt. Right now everything hurt. He couldn't have shown up at a worse time if he'd tried. She felt like bird poop, and she looked under the weather, which was a phrase her cognitive therapist had told her to use instead of calling herself hideous. But really, sometimes human beings just looked hideous. There was no shame in it, or at least there wouldn't be if Red weren't standing there on her doorstep looking delicious. She opened her mouth to croak a startled hello, but he held up a hand to cut her off. He was unusually smile-free. Severe and serious in a way that made her nervous. Not because he was upset with her, but because he was upset at all. Redford Morgan should always be smiling. He raked a hand through his hair and said,
I just want to make it clear that I'm incredibly pissed at you. But,
he cleared his throat, looking slightly unsure.
But, I don't think you meant to say what you said. I'm still pissed, though. And I'll be pissed until I'm ready to stop.
She nodded slowly, not entirely sure why he was explaining the mechanics of human anger, but quite certain that it was important to him.
Okay.
For a moment, he seemed almost painfully relieved. Then his eyes narrowed at her faint, raspy voice, and he said accusingly,
You're sick.
She supposed she should be flattered he couldn't tell by sight alone, but something about that speech he'd just made, and the look on his face was nagging at her brain.
It's nothing. You know you're allowed to be angry, don't you? In general, I mean. And at me. You are allowed to be angry at me.
He faltered for a moment.
Of course I know. I just said all that, didn't I?
Suddenly she realised what was bothering her. He had just said as much, but he'd spoken as if he was trying something new, and he wasn't entirely sure that it would work.
You need to lie down,
he said, interrupting her thoughts.
Don't be silly, this happens all the time.
Although she would love to lie back down. In fact, she might just sit. Red wouldn't make her feel like some kind of freak, because her body was giving out on her and spoons were a distant memory. She leaned against the wall, then started to slide down it, just a little. He frowned.
Are you passing out right now?
That's usually much more sudden,
she said absently.
I'm just going to sit right here.
Or we could do this.
He stepped into the flat and picked her up.
What are you doing?
Carrying you. Work with me here. Presumably he meant that she should stop kicking her legs around awkwardly.
Since she was very, very tired, and since walking felt like being stabbed in the lower back, she did. He nudged the door shut and said,
Where do you want to go?
I've been in the living room. Red, I'm really, really super eternally sorry about...
You should stop talking. You got tonsillitis or something?
Or something. But it'll pass soon. This is just what happens when I get too tired or I don't eat right.
Or you step on the cracks in the pavement.
He put her down gently in the little nest she'd made on the sofa, then knelt on the floor beside her.
You know, for such a funny-sounding word, fibromyalgia is...
A motherfucker?
Chloe, did you just swear? You never swear.
He paused.
That was fun. Do it again.
No,
she said primly. He chuckled, shook his head, and she'd missed him so much her heart cracked open like an egg. Sticky emotions spilled out. The remnants of her protective shell were scattered around in tiny shards.
I'm sorry,
she whispered. An explanation, a real one, was necessary, but she couldn't bear to look at him as she did it. If she focused on her knees, Chloe decided sensibly, Red wouldn't be able to see the truth of her feelings in her eyes.
That night,
she sighed.
I know you said it wasn't complicated, but it complicated things for me. I suppose that's just how I am. As soon as you stopped touching me, reality kicked in, and I started panicking about what it meant and what you wanted or didn't want, and, well, in short, I overthought everything and made several colossal mistakes, and I'm sorry.
Chloe, look at me.
Her first instinct was to refuse, like a toddler rejecting vegetables. But that wouldn't be very mature, and immaturity had gotten her into a mess just last weekend, so she made herself face him. He was running his knuckles over his lips thoughtfully, studying her with those three little lines between his eyebrows, like he didn't know what to make of her. Finally, he said,
So, it complicated things, huh?
She swallowed hard, his pale gaze freezing her in place. He was endlessly hypnotic. her voice a thready whisper, she confirmed.
Yes,
quietly he said. Complicated things for me too. It's funny, you're so smart, and I feel so fucking obvious, but you don't seem to know what I want from you.
She shook her head.
No, I don't. Or maybe I do, and I'm too afraid to face it.
As if he'd heard the echo of her thoughts, he leaned closer, raising a hand to her cheek.
I should show you.
His fingertips traced the curves of her face, her jaw, her throat, his eyes following the movement as if he were mapping her out. His focus was so formidable, it stilled the earth and stopped time. It made her feel... But that was it. That was all. Red's focus simply made her feel. She released a shuddering breath. Her heart thudded a bruising rhythm against her chest. She supposed he'd kiss her now, and she'd succumb to his sexual onslaught or something along those lines. Only she realized with a wince she didn't quite feel up to it. Sitting this close to him made her skin feel like shivering silk. But arousal was a whimper beneath the scream of her body's aches, pains, and sheer exhaustion. Abruptly, she remembered nights with Henry, nights when he'd turned away from her with disgusted mutters after failed seductions that only embarrassed them both. If you didn't want to, you should have just said. She had said. She'd said, Henry, I'm sick. And he thought the power of his bloody penis would make it all better. Well, she wasn't about to go through that again, not even with Red, no matter how much she liked him. Chloe stiffened under his feather-like touch, and he faltered, concern softening his gaze. Not anger, just worry. Good. Perhaps he wouldn't react badly at all. Her breaths came a little bit easier. Firmly, she told him,
You should know. That I want you. But tonight I don't feel particularly...
Chloe,
he interrupted softly, his frown back in place.
Sweetheart, you really don't know what I want, do you?
He caught her hand, pressing his lips to the slice of her palm framed by her wrist support's Velcro straps. After a moment, he said carefully,
I'd like to stick around tonight. Just to hang out. That okay?
She felt dizzy with relief. He wouldn't make things difficult, and he wouldn't make her push him away. Thank goodness, because for once Chloe really didn't feel like pushing anyone away.
Oh, right, yes. That's fine.
Apparently, she'd lost the ability to form complex sentences. His eyes crinkled at the corners as he smiled.
Nice to know you want me, though.
Oh, God.
Heat flooded her cheeks, even as a rueful smile curved her own lips.
Don't be awful.
Can't help it. And just so you know, it's mutual.
His gaze darkened.
But we'll talk about that another time.
For a second, the promise of that other time, of that conversation and all it might mean, hung hot and heavy between them. Rather how she imagined his body might feel covering hers. But then she remembered why a conversation like that could be difficult. Because if Red wanted more than just touches in the dark, if he wanted what she wanted, Chloe might be too afraid to reach out and take it. The promise of more with him glittered like broken glass, beautiful but potentially deadly. Good things usually hurt in the end. But she was being maudlin and getting ahead of herself and overthinking, which hadn't served her well the last time. Brushing the ghost of her mistakes aside, Chloe sat up straighter, ignoring the stabs of pain sliding between her vertebrae, and asked,
You do forgive me, don't you?
I do.
He reached for her again, and her heart practically stopped beating. She remembered the warmth of his touch. And the cold of those silver rings with hazy desperation, as if the last time had been a fever dream,
but all he did was tap one of the buttons on the front of her pajamas and say, "You do know how to apologize, Button. I forgive you. Just fine." Well, that was a relief at least. Chapter 16. Chloe wanted him. That's what she'd said, loud and clear, in a way he'd never expected to hear, at least not outside the bedroom. She struck Red as the sort of woman who'd only share her desires when she was already halfway to orgasm, who'd whisper hot commands and sweet confessions in the dark, but she wanted him, and she'd said it out loud. She also didn't know what he wanted, which he supposed was understandable, because it was only here and now that his purest want, his need, had become fully clear to him. When it came to Chloe, it turned out Red's ultimate goal was to make her happy. That was it. That was all. The realization jolted him like 1,000 volts to the heart. He felt something she might not want him to feel. Something she seemed almost afraid of. Her gaze flickered away whenever his words were too intense or his voice too tender. He knew that. He'd noticed that. So he shoved the soft warmth in his chest aside. He'd examine it later. Chloe's eyes fluttered shut for a moment, and he drank in the sight of her. She was wearing pink pinstripe pajamas with buttons down the front, the kind grumpy old men wore. She had a lot in common with grumpy old men, actually, except for the part where he was desperate to kiss her. Instead of her hair's usual neat shiny bun, it looked like she'd grabbed the dark waves with a fist, shoved a hair tie over them and hoped for the best. It was what Red did with his own hair when he was working out. Judging by her small mountain of blankets and the mess strewn across her coffee table, it was what she did when she felt like shit. He was probably the worst kind of monster because Chloe was sick, but he still thought she was unbelievably sexy. Then he remembered that she was always sick, so maybe poor health wasn't something that should de-sex a person. Definitely couldn't de-sex Chloe. He cleared his throat and stood, looking around the room. The empty water bottles and cardboard boxes she'd left by her front door had reproduced like bunnies, creeping down the hall until they were visible from here. "You should call me when you need things recycled." "Maybe," she mumbled, snuggling deeper into her blankets. "Definitely. It's my job." Although a cautiously excited voice in his head whispered, "Not for long." This idea he'd had about finding his own place, about trying again with his art, it wouldn't let go. He rolled it around his mind like whiskey in his mouth while he gathered Chloe's empty teacups and glasses of juice. "Don't clean up," she told him. "I can cope, you know." "And I could cope without electricity, but why the fuck should I?" She tutted. "Surely you have better things to do with your evening." "Nothing I'd enjoy more than being here with you." The words flashed up in his mind without permission, but thankfully he controlled his mouth more easily than his thoughts. "You can't get rid of me, Button. You're mine tonight. I booked you."
"You booked?"
Her eyes flew open.
"Oh, my goodness, I completely forgot. Your website."
His lips quirked. "You forgot? You mean your brain is actually a squidgy grey thing and not a computer? I've been wondering." She didn't smile back.
"I have done something, you know. I have the home page designed to show you, and I wanted to go through the shop's functionalities, but we'll have to move to my desk."
She sat up and winced, just a tiny tightening of her features, but he felt like someone had ripped out his heart. "Sit your ass down. Relax. It's not a big deal."
"Don't you want—"
"No," he said firmly. Then when she looked genuinely disappointed, he added, "Send me a link tomorrow. I'm—" She leapt on his hesitation, her eyebrows raised.
"You're eager?"
"I'm starting to get excited about work again. That's all." He shrugged, as if it didn't make him feel electrified. "So I'll look tomorrow, if you're feeling better.
She gave him a delighted, if faintly exhausted, smile.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic.
Thanks. So, do you want more juice or not?
The smile became a narrow glare.
I can't get my own juice.
But why would you do that when you have a willing servant?
She rolled her eyes. He knew why she hesitated. Considering the way her so-called friends and fiancé had dropped her, she was sensitive about letting people get close. When she finally closed her eyes and said,
"Continue, if you must,"
he felt like he'd climbed a fucking mountain. When he returned to the living room, she sat up for the juice without wincing, and he said,
"Is it me? Or do you seem better than you were 10 minutes ago?"
"You're right," she took a sip. "The power of your company has cured me. The doctors were right about natural endorphins all along."
It's because the buprenorphine patch I put on finally started pulling its weight.
I am drugged to high heaven. It's delightful."
"Oh, good."
"I should have powered through,"
she told him. "Since it's my strongest painkiller and I'm not supposed to build up an immunity to opiates in my 30s. I was fed up with feeling my joints scrape together inside me like knives, so I have no regrets."
He stared. "You really are a badass."
She waggled her bunny slippers.
"Yes."
"Have you eaten?"
She shrugged, sipped her juice some more and said in a suspiciously casual tone,
"Not yet."
"Ah, she was one of those he should have known. I'll put that another way. When did you last eat?"
Chloe's face took on the shiftiest expression ever made by a human being in the history of the world. She hid guilt about as well as the average family dog.
"I'm not sure."
As if on cue, her stomach rumbled. She looked down irritably and muttered,
"Et tu?"
"Today?"
he nudged. She shrugged.
"Oh, for God's sake. You haven't eaten today. Are you serious?"
"I couldn't be bothered,"
she snapped. "Right, sure. You're too lazy to feed yourself. It's not because you feel like shit or anything.
Oh, be quiet."
He stood and she looked up at him, something bleak and resigned in her gaze. In the second before she schooled her expression, he realised that she thought he was leaving. His heart constricted. He wanted to find every friend who'd ever ditched her, and especially her fucking fiancé, and force them all to walk barefoot across a room full of Legos for the rest of their lives. Not that he'd been thinking much about punishments.
"What do you want to eat?"
he asked briskly, hoping she wouldn't hear the emotion rumbling beneath his voice. Her mouth opened, closed, opened again.
You
like stir-fry?"
She shot him a mutinous glare, like he'd offered to piss on her PlayStation or something.
"Red?
I mean, who doesn't like stir-fry? Weirdos, that's who."
He headed for the kitchen. It took a second or two, but she stumbled after him, her blanket wrapped around her like a cape. Cutest, prissiest Batman he'd ever seen. When she said,
"Red, you're not cooking for me,"
he smiled to himself. "Just a bit." The flat's little kitchen, all tiles and steel, always seemed cold to Chloe. But today, the air vibrated with sultry heat even before the stove was turned on. That was Red's fault. He stood in front of the fridge looking horribly sexy in his usual t-shirt and jeans, bending over at an angle that should be illegal for men who had backsides like his. She sat in her comfortable little kitchen chair and fiddled with the neckline of her pyjamas. Maybe her current haze, partly feverish fatigue and partly the patch on her back pumping drugs through her skin, was a blessing in disguise. If she weren't feeling so rubbish, it would be much, much harder to ignore how pretty he was.
"Who does all this food prep?"
he asked, popping up from the fridge door with far too many boxes balanced in his arms. What was he making? Gourmet chow mein?
"Eve."
"The rainbow girl? Really? She's..."
He put the boxes down and waved his hand in a way that conveyed Eve's chaotic vibe perfectly.
"If I'd had to guess one of your sisters, I would have said, what was her name? Danielle?
Danica."
she corrected automatically. Being around him was so incredibly easy. She forgot how strange their relationship was sometimes. How he didn't know basic things about her, like her sister's full name. But he knew she loved Smudge, and didn't trust, and wanted to be brave. She wished he knew more. Wished he knew everything. Wished she could share it all with him. That wasn't a desire Chloe felt often, or at all. But he made everything safe. Christ, woman, he spluttered, interrupting her thoughts and bringing a smile to her lips. Why do you have a kitchen drawer full of fancy pens? He shut the offending drawer in disgust and turned toward another. Where are your spoons?
Red, I don't want you to cook for me, and that's not...
Too late. He'd opened the next drawer, which was full of her spare medication. But he didn't gawk at the countless colourful boxes, old painkillers she'd abandoned because they made her mouth too dry to talk, or because she'd gotten used to them and upgraded like an addict grown accustomed to the hit. He didn't ask about them either, or slam the drawer shut and give her a part pitying, part worried look, like her mother would. Instead, he shook his head and said, "You got everything in this kitchen but cutlery, Chloe." Then he turned to the next drawer, discovered the spoons, and carried on as if nothing had happened. Funny. Chloe was used to seeing her life and her illness as normal, but she wasn't used to other people acting the same way. "Now," he said, popping the lid off one of the boxes and grabbing pre-sliced peppers. "If you really don't want stir-fry, because let's face it, you are a weirdo, this is your last chance to tell me."
"You are not cooking for me."
There. That sounded firm, reasonable, and mature. Kind of. "Why not?" he asked just as reasonably, while he rifled through her cupboards.
"Because you're not a bloody home helper."
He turned to look at her. "Chloe, language."
"Oh, for..."
he interrupted, his tone serious, his words quiet. "Stop worrying, okay?" His search of the cupboards abandoned, he crossed his arms over his broad chest. Her gaze absolutely did not catch on the shift of his biceps or the raised veins on his strong forearms. Well, it did, but only for a second. "You think this is a big deal because, no offence, you've had a lot of people in your life who claimed to care about you but didn't act like it. That's not me. I can cook, and right now, you can't. So I'm doing it for you because that's how people should behave. They should fill in each other's gaps. Don't think about it too hard." She nodded slowly, staring at her clasped hands for a minute as inconvenient, mushy emotions flooded her. Then she released a slow, shaky breath and finally said what she'd wanted to say for a while but hadn't been able to force past her clenched teeth.
"Thank you."
"No worries," he said easily, and she didn't even wonder if he meant it. There was no doubt in her mind that he did. Red found a wok and opened more boxes, poured oil into the pan and yanked out what seemed to be every seasoning she owned. Then he ran a hand through his hair, rolled his eyes as if at himself and said, "You got a hair tie?" "I never know where they are," she admitted, except for the one currently in her hair, which she tugged free and handed to him. "Thanks." Bright blue paint stained some of his nails. His fingertips grazed hers. Her body lit up inside, reacting as if he'd offered to rip off her clothes and do her on the counter. Not that she wanted him to, because she really wasn't feeling very well, and it would be murder on her lower back. She sternly informed her nipples of these pertinent facts, but they gestured rudely at her and continued to tingle like a pair of slutty batteries. Meanwhile, Red somehow managed to remain gorgeous while wearing a man bun. When the kitchen filled with the sharp sizzle of cooking food, she spoke again.
"So, you like to cook?"
"I like to cook for other people," he said. "Cooking for myself's okay, but it's not exactly the same." Something about that revelation filled her with equal parts relief and disappointment.
"I see."
Though his focus was on the food, he arched an eyebrow, amusement dancing over his expression. "What do you see, Button?"
"You
run around making dinner for everyone.
She'd meant that to sound teasing, but it came out a little bit not. His smile widened as he shot her a look.
Jealous?
She snorted. Pardon me? Of course I'm not jealous. When had she become such a shameless liar? Her dad would be so disappointed in her new habit of casual deceit.
That's good. Be weird if you were jealous of my mother.
And now she was mortified. She wrapped her blanket tighter around herself, as if she could disappear inside it. This was what came of liking men, rampant idiocy. She opened her mouth and searched for a way to dig herself out of that particular hole, but Red didn't seem to think it was necessary. When he looked at her again, his obvious amusement was replaced by curiosity.
Hey,
he asked, as though it had just occurred to him. Where's Smudge? Her heart lurched. She'd been hoping he wouldn't notice.
Gone?
Red stilled.
Gone?
Annie came back a few days ago. She was in Malmö.
Chloe narrowed her eyes.
She calls Smudge Perdita, which would be an excellent name. I love 101 Dalmatians, except that Smudge isn't a Dalmatian, so it's ludicrous.
For some reason, Red didn't agree with her on the name. He didn't comment on the name at all. He abandoned his post at the stove, and before she knew it, he was standing in front of her. He sank his hands into the tangled mess of her hair. He kissed her head, and she almost fainted dead away. He said gravely,
I'm sorry, Button.
I don't care,
she mumbled, breathing deep. Not because he smelled like fresh sheets and warmth and blueberry shampoo. She was just breathing.
Smudge wasn't even my cat.
I'd get you a new one, but you know the rules.
I don't want a new one.
He smiled down at her.
Did you cry?
I... Say no, say no, say no. Only a little bit.
Red seemed satisfied. As long as you cried, you'll be okay. It's what my mum always says. He went back to the walk, and her head felt cold without his hands cradling it. Since she was saying things she shouldn't tonight, she murmured,
I'd quite like to meet your mother. I mean,
she added quickly,
I'd be interested to see what she's like, because you're so...
He arched an eyebrow.
I'm so...
infuriating.
Right. Don't know how you put up with me.
He chuckled, shot her a knowing look that made her cheeks burn hotter than the sun.
She gave me her card,
Chloe blurted.
Annie, I mean. And you know what it says?
Something shit,
he guessed,
because we hate her.
It says, Knicker Whisperer.
Red's lips twitched.
That's interesting. I mean, weird. Very weird.
I know, it's funny,
Chloe sighed.
It's brilliant, unique and intriguing and catchy, and the card is beautifully designed. And I bet if I go to her mysterious Knicker Whispering website, that'll be great too.
She huffed and glared at nothing in particular.
What is that woman's game? What is her angle?
Why'd she give you the card?
She says we should have coffee.
I don't believe it.
I'll turn up and she'll text and say, so sorry, she's in Venice.
Red ignored almost everything she'd said, which was both irritating and hilarious.
So, she wants to be friends?
Chloe stared at him.
I don't see why she would. We spoke for all of 5 minutes.
But she made a big impression.
She took my cat!
The man had lost his marbles, clearly. He went on as if she hadn't spoken.
Maybe you made an impression on her, too.
What about me could possibly make an impression?
Chloe demanded. Red stared at her for a little too long. She bit her lip. He smiled.
Look, all I'm saying is, Annie might like you. And you might like her if you gave it a chance. You have similar tastes in cats.
You are not funny.
I want you to make a friend.
You're my friend,
she snapped.
New topic. When are you setting up that Instagram account?
I don't know.
He tried to run a hand through his hair, failed because it was tied up, and tutted. Now a slow smile curved her lips,
I can do it for you if you're busy. In all fairness, he was often busy, tending to old ladies and feeding street urchins and painting magical masterpieces like a patron saint of goodness and art. But she didn't think that was the problem. You don't need to do that, he said. I'll. She'd bet money that he was trying to say, I'll do it, but couldn't quite make himself. Funny, she murmured. I didn't notice before. He gave her a suspicious look. Notice what? That you're scared of social media.
Scared?
He scowled, turning to face her.
Chloe, I am not... It's...
You're winding me up again, aren't you? I'm simply acknowledging your obvious aversion to...
He pointed a stern finger at her. Stop trying to confuse me. I'm not saying shit.
He was blushing, slashes of pink high on his cheekbones. His ears too, which she'd never seen before, since his hair was usually down. Something in her chest softened like a marshmallow, which couldn't be healthy. I'm serious, she said. I'll do it for you. I'll manage it for you. You wouldn't even have to look at it unless you wanted to. She didn't know why he felt this way, when once upon a time his work had been everywhere. But she didn't need to know. She'd take care of this, to give him space to take care of himself. He looked at her for a long moment before taking his phone out of his pocket. She watched with a frown as he tapped at the screen, his embarrassed flush barely fading, his lower lip caught between his teeth. Then, just as her understanding dawned, he came over and held out the phone. There, he said, showing her the login screen. I downloaded Instagram. She stared. I read. I didn't mean to pressure you.
You didn't. I said I was going to do it and I meant it. I'm serious about this, so if your professional opinion is that I need one...
I'm not an expert, she said quickly,
suddenly self-conscious. His gaze snared hers, so simply trusting it burned all her hesitation away. You're a successful small business owner, he said, and you know computer shit.
She snorted. Computer shit?
Be quiet, I'm concentrating.
He tapped some more, and before she knew it, he was showing her yet another screen, a blank account with his name on it.
That's that, he said, looking slightly surprised by himself.
Then he blinked, cleared his throat, and his blush deepened.
Thing is, I really don't know much about this stuff, so maybe you could help me.
He was so sweet. She was in danger of losing a tooth. Soft warmth flooded her at the sight of this huge man with his pink cheeks and hard jaw. Then came admiration, because he'd smashed through the brick wall of self-doubt like it was nothing. The same wall she often struggled to even approach.
Whatever you want, she told him, and she'd never meant anything more.
Thanks,
he said gruffly. He caught her hand for one heart-stopping moment and squeezed. Then he turned away back to the walk.
Let's get some food in ya.
Apparently, feeding Chloe made her sleepy. Very, very sleepy. Red washed up while she dozed on the sofa, then checked her biscuit tin for more of those homemade ginger snaps. He scored big time and munched on them while he made tea. Did Eve bake these as well as prepping all the food? Because if so, next time she flirted with him, maybe he should flirt back. It would be an amazing plan if he wasn't completely hooked on her sister. But he was. He returned to the living room and sat beside Chloe as gently as he could. Since he was overgrown, his weight shifted the cushions a little too much and she stirred. Her lashes fluttered, eyes opened. She'd taken off her glasses, so she looked at him without focusing and gave him a soft little smile. Maybe every single atom in his body imploded, reformed and exploded at the sight of that smile. Maybe. But he tried to keep that to himself.
You should go to bed, he told her.
I won't sleep. I can already tell.
Weren't you just sleeping?
Nothing so satisfying as that, I assure you,
she muttered,
and cradled the tea in both hands.
I don't suppose you'd like to watch something over the top and faintly ridiculous? I feel like cowboys? Space cowboys. Do you like space cowboys? You probably don't.
The tangled waves of her hair were a dark cloud around her face. She gave him a sideways look through the wild chestnut strands, eyebrows raised, lips pursed at the edge of the mug. He told her truthfully, I love space cowboys. But they only got 20 minutes through an episode of Killjoys before Chloe's eyelids drooped. Red turned off the TV, put her glasses safely on his head, and scooped her up in his arms. His heart beat brighter than it had before. She turned everything pink, pink like poofy skirts and pinstripe pyjamas and the tip of her tongue when she tapped it against her teeth. Pink like he was fucking gone for her. Pink like the little decorative pillows on her bed. He nudged them off and laid her down, and she mumbled,
Red?
Yeah, Button.
Come here. You smell like sleep.
He didn't know what that meant, but he decided it was a good thing. After a moment's hesitation, he tucked the covers over her, then crossed to the other side of the bed and lay on top of them. He'd just stay here for a while, until she fell asleep again. He'd practice some of the techniques Dr. Maddox had mentioned at their first appointment today, taking the time to arrange his thoughts and feelings, sinking into positive moments. He was supposed to write shit down, but he preferred to visualize, and the doc had said that was okay too. So Red lay back, closed his eyes, and thought about Chloe's smile, about stir-fry and space cowboys, about feeling like himself. He counted the moments of clarity he'd teased from his messy mind today, and he was proud. He let himself feel good, good, good. It was surprisingly easy. Chapter 17. When he woke, the bedroom was bright. Birdsong and cold air floated through the open window, and Chloe was standing by her dresser in a towel. This was an excellent way to wake up.
Hey, Chloe.
She screeched, then clapped a hand over her mouth.
You're awake!
Her hair was dripping wet. Her skin glistened with little water droplets, and the towel wrapped around her only hit mid-thigh.
Yeah, he said roughly. I'm awake.
She made a strangled sort of noise and grabbed some stuff from the dresser. He looked away from her thighs long enough to notice she was holding a pile of clothes. Then he looked back at her thighs.
Be a gentleman and close your eyes, she sniffed.
Do I have to?
Not anymore, because I am leaving.
She clutched her clothes to her towel-clad chest and rushed off toward the bathroom. Under the slick strands of her hair, he caught sight of something on her upper back, a pale rectangle that looked kind of like a bandage. No, he realized, it was like a giant nicotine patch. Maybe some kind of medication? Then she slammed the door shut. He stood, ran a hand through his hair, and wondered how the hell he'd managed to fall asleep. Abruptly, the bathroom door opened again, just a crack. Chloe called,
Do you still have my hair tie? I can't find any of the others.
He tugged it off his wrist and handed it through the slight gap in the door.
You feeling better?
Quite.
Details, he ordered, though he expected she'd tell him to piss off.
Instead, after a pause, she said,
I'm still exhausted, but I'm not tired. That helps.
She shut the door. Her next words were muffled through the wood.
Thank you. You smell like sleep.
Any time.
When she came out again, he was sitting on the bed, trying not to look like a man who'd barely resisted the urge to snoop through everything she owned. It had been hard because this room was so Chloe, from the sci-fi looking computer with two screens on her desk to the pretty row of shoes tucked just under her bed. There was stuff everywhere. Candles she'd never lit, fancy bottles of perfume she'd clearly never used, notebooks stacked in piles so high she'd surely never use those either, and 1,000 pictures of her family. It was adorable.
Sorry about that, she said, smoothing her hands over her skirt. It was sunshine yellow, with a thick white stripe at the bottom, made her skin glow, made him want to go over there on his knees. Her hair was up and sleek as glass, her glasses perfectly polished.
I meant to take my clothes into the bathroom with me, but I forgot.
I didn't mind. Understatement of the year.
She gave him a look.
I have a spare toothbrush if you want it. You could also just go home. However, I thought I might make you breakfast to say thank you for dinner.
That took his attention away from her legs, which was no mean feat.
You want to make me breakfast?
Don't sound so surprised. If you like eggs and toast, I am more than capable.
No, I just...
He just wasn't used to women doing things for him. He did things for them and that was it. That was how it worked.
He ran a hand through his hair and realised that apparently that wasn't how it worked anymore.
All right. I like eggs. Thanks.
He found the spare toothbrush. Her bathroom shelf was full of products that matched. She bought the same brand and scent of shampoo and conditioner, body wash and moisturiser, because, of course, she did. She liked flowers and strawberries. He added that carefully to the list of things he knew about Chloe Brown, a list that was longer than he'd ever expected it to be, but still not long enough. Maybe it would never be long enough. Still, it was satisfying as the morning went on to add to that list again and again. First, it was, Chloe makes great scrambled eggs. Then it was, it feels good to wash dishes while Chloe dries. Finally, he realised, starting my day with Chloe feels like starting my day in front of a canvas. When they finished washing up, Red had a smile on his face that he already knew would last until he went to bed that night. Then all at once, he turned left, Chloe turned right, and they both moved at exactly the wrong time. Or maybe it was exactly the right time. It felt right when she stumbled into him. It felt right, gripping her waist to steady her. It felt right, her hands pressing against his chest. So right he didn't move away. She must be able to feel his heart pounding. He was surprised it wasn't visible through his clothes. She tilted her head back to look at him. Her lips parted. Was this how she'd look, just before he kissed her? He wanted to add that knowledge to the list. She said, her voice still a little hoarse, "Sorry, gosh, sorry, I wasn't looking where I was going." But she didn't move either. His hands tightened at her waist for a moment before he forced himself to relax. It was a long, slow process, loosening every tense muscle in his body, reminding the unthinking part of himself that he couldn't just put his mouth on hers. He meant to let go of her completely, meant to step back, meant to say something. He only managed the last of those goals, and what he said wasn't exactly sensible. In fact, he didn't know how it sneaked past security to roll off his tongue. "Do you know what I want yet, Chloe?" At his rough whisper, she froze. She hadn't exactly been moving before, but now everything about her was unnaturally still, as if she wasn't even breathing. He closed his eyes and cursed himself. "Too much? Too... yes," she said softly. "I do. And I think I'm scared." When he opened his eyes, she was dragging her teeth over her lower lip, her frown agonized. The expression on her face practically ripped his heart open. He swallowed, kept pushing, because screw it. "Why? Do you think I'd hurt you?" He didn't add, "like everyone else." She seemed to hear the words anyway. "Maybe." Her frown deepened, and she shook her head irritably. Against his chest, her hands curled into fists, fingers tangling in his t-shirt. "No, yes, I just... I'm always afraid that..." She looked up at him, realization dawning on her face.
red. I think I'm being a coward.
There's a big difference between being a coward and putting your emotional safety first, he said. He knew all about that. Then again, so did she. She was nodding slowly, but her eyes narrowed behind her glasses.
There is a difference. I look out for my own safety all the time, constantly. That's not what this is. The urge I have to avoid this, she murmured, almost to herself. It's like going to bed at 9 sharp every night. Like refusing to make plans, even with my sisters. Like staying inside for a year because I don't think I can handle catching a cold.
He blinked, distracted for a second. You did that. Her smile was a quick silver flash.
The first few years were not good, Red. I was not good. This list isn't the first challenge I've had to set myself.
She wet her lips, her eyes drifting away from his face as she sank into her thoughts.
But I always succeed, one way or another. I always take the next step, no matter how long it takes.
Of course you do, he whispered. You're a tough motherfucker, remember? She looked up at him again. Her smile wider this time, more certain, like it was going nowhere. Her eyes glittered with something that made his heart feel light in his chest.
That's true. I am. And I want you. All of you.